Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back to Reclaiming the Republic. And I want to just, before we get right into the content, because we need to get right into the content, I want to kind of mention something that, you know, it's worth mentioning. I've point to the hypocrites of the music and entertainment industry. And as a matter of fact, I always try to point out to people that those who are actors, those who are performers, their business, their job is to lie, to create a persona, to get you to believe in something they are projecting. So in other words, these are actors. Just change the name from an actor to liar, because that's their job, is to get you to believe in something that isn't real, something that they aren't, and so forth. So when you see De Niro, when you see any of these actors or even performers like Bruce Springsteen, who's, you know, supposedly born in the USA, you know, Mr. Hemorrhoid, I call him, because he seems like he's, you know, got a bad case when he sings. But and this always kind of amazed me how people with terrible voices like him, how they became key singers. Rod Stewart, Kim Carnes. I mean, come on, really? Anyway, I guess as long as they could kind of carry a tune, but enough poking. Yesterday in the news, Roger Waters rejected a huge amount of money from Facebook, and he told them to F off. He said, no effing way, because this is what he said, quote, I only mention that because this is an insidious movement of them to take over absolutely everything, close quote, when he was talking about Zuckerberg's company and the big tech companies. So it's refreshing to see that some of those in the industry actually maintain some level of integrity to what they're doing, and they haven't been compromised into the globalist movement, because these people actually understood the principles of individual expression, individual creation, individual property, and so forth. They're not, you know, I've never seen anybody from some of these, you know, classic bands like Pink Floyd commenting, oh, you know what, we need to, you know, institute communism so that we can take from those who have and give to those who have not, so that everybody can have an equal opportunity. You know, like Bono does. Bono commonly goes down this path that we need to, you know, level the playing field for. Well, why doesn't Bono take his great estate and all of his money and level the playing field in his industry to allow musicians to have equal footing and access? Well, you know, put your money where your mouth is, Bono. But there's no way he's going to do this. He's a self-serving, narcissist, hypocrite. And I know that these were, I mean, he probably takes real offense to hearing these things, because he really believes the crap that he's saying. And until he actually steps away and starts looking at what he's doing, and then he starts realizing that there are reasons why certain people actually become popular, because some of it's manipulation, some of it is promoting, some of it's marketing, but some of it is tangibly real. Some of these artists, some of these musicians were actually talented, actually, you know, entertained and did things. But anyway, be that as it may, let me get back into what I would say is the more important discussion, and that is the Assumption Acts. As you know, the show is sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you are listening to the only show that goes through the academic evidence and gives you the academic evidence-based solutions of why, what, how, and where we need to go. We have a listen line, or I should say, actually, we do have a listen line. And if you go to Talk Radio or Talk Stream Live, or if you go to Red State Talk Radio, you can actually dial. So if you can't tune in, you're driving along the countryside and you're transiting across the United States, and from one station to the next, you can't find Red State Talk Radio. You can use the dial-in number. You just dial, I think it's a 605-650 number, and you can dial that. And as a matter of fact, after the first break, I will come back and give you that number. But just go to Red State Talk Radio. It tells you what number. And then it's just, you don't even have a long-distance number. It's just the time on your phone. And that doesn't cost you anything, so that you can listen to this show without having to worry about, in your transit, of being able to actually, you know, get from one station to the next as you go through an hour of traversing across, you know, some state and or the countryside or what have you. So anyway, but we do have a comment line, 425-270-5416. And I love it. I get people to dial, and I think that they're, you know, expecting somebody to answer. This is a comment line. That means that I really don't answer that. If you ever catch me answering that, you've almost caught that window of that glimpse of the moment of paradise as the sun comes up in the east. I mean, it is such a rare occasion. It just hardly ever happens. As a matter of fact, you know, it's like one in a million sailors, you know, that have sailed on the sea have never glimpsed that moment of paradise. And what is the moment of paradise? It is, and the conditions have to be perfect for this, but when the sun is coming up, you know, it's got to be clear skies, and as the sun is coming up over the horizon, over the water, as it starts to elevate over the water, there is a quick and momentary flash of green before the sunlight actually comes over. So in other words, as it's going through the spectrum of changing its colors in its angles, bending through the atmosphere and so forth, it actually has this like green flash. Look it up and you'll find that, you know, it is a mariner type of experience, but very few experience it. And the only point is that very few people will ever catch me, you know, where I have access and I have the time to answer the comment line. I pick those up in the evenings. I go through every phone message. I go through every email and I respond. As a matter of fact, I even responded to those people who commented, you know, from the Epoch Times, from Trevor Lawton. There are quite a few people that came to the Reclaiming the Republic domain, and I got probably the most people and most comments were regarding the quality or the out of date of the website. You know, hey, it's, you know, I kind of like what you're doing, but it's hard for me to take you serious because you're, you know, your website's so old school, or, you know, some of the mistakes in your editing and so forth. And I'm going, wow, really? I mean, it's hard to take the framer seriously because some of the grammatical mistakes that they made, right? What? No. It's about the message. It's about the content. And when people can't get past, you know, these little, you know, what I'll just say, superficial things, we got real problems, folks. We have real problems. But again, let's get into what Madison was talking about, because it's all about the Assumption Act and the importance of putting this argument at bay of the United States. And just because the Assumption Act was passed doesn't make it constitutional. Just because the Civil Rights Act and the ADA Act and many acts have been passed, it doesn't make them constitutional. The only way we can actually wade through all of this with a true manner of, you know, integrity, contractual integrity and accuracy, is for the states to actually convene Republic Review and to determine and deem that these things were violations. Because truly, the only court over violations of the Constitution can be and must be the states, because they're the only judges and juries to their compact. There is no tribunal, no court that is superior to the states. Those are Madison's words, and we'll get into those soon as well. Madison states this. This is, again, in April 1790. The debts of the particular states cannot, in any point of view, be considered as actual debts of the United States. And the United States are not bound by any past requisition or any resolutions now existing to assume them. Till the accounts are settled and the balances ascertained, we have been told, sir, not only that the assumption of the state debts by the United States is a matter of right on the part of the states and a matter of obligation on the part of the United States, but likewise that it is equitable, nay, that it is a matter of necessity. It has been said that the United States are invested with the resources of the particular states and that therefore they are bound to provide for the debts of those states. I think I may safe rest the issue of this question on a question of fact. Whether the states most urgent in this business are incapacitated from providing for their debts by the establishment of the present Constitution. If gentlemen assert that to be the case, I think it is incumbent upon them to prove either that the resources which they have given up would exceed their quota of the federal requisitions, or that the use of these resources by the general government will throw a disproportioned burden upon that particular part of the community. Now, we will be right back, and I'll have that number for you when we come back. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so here is the listen line number, and it's no longer a 605 number. It is 717. There, we still have a 605 number. That now is just for the Encore channel. The 717-946-6952. You can get this from redstatetalkradio.com. And so they do change these things because I have no idea why, other than the fact that we kind of grow out of line capacity and have to go to a larger line throughput, because we're, Red State Talk Radio is becoming the talk monster. I mean, if you look at its history, it started off kind of an obscure thing way back 10, 15 years ago. And so even longer than that. The guy that, you know, owned it kind of died, but he bequeathed it to Scott, you know, or Scott kind of bought it out from him. But bottom line, this has been a growing radio station. And so it's, you know, still going through some growing pains, but it is probably one of the number one. I mean, if you go to TalkStream Live to find out how many people are listening to Red State Talk Radio, every time I launch the show, I actually look at where we're kind of rated on TalkStream Live. When my show launches in the beginning of this show, when I start talking, we're at, you know, in, we're usually in the top 10. We're usually in the top 10. And by the time we end, because some people start coming on to pick up Mark Levin, and because that's, we're in that time slot that is the hottest time slot to compete. And so they're playing, you know, what's his name? Jughead, Sean Hannity. I call him Jughead because he kind of reminds me of that jock, you know, kind of approach. Anyway, Sean Hannity is playing his reruns. Glenn Beck is playing his reruns. Everybody is trying to, you know, compete in that 3 o'clock time slot. And so for me to be, for this show to be in the top 10 and then be in the top 20 during that entire time frame, to me, that's huge. That is huge. We, you know, have a much larger audience than, you know, I can acknowledge and I can admit, just due to the fact that I don't have much interface with you, because I just think that there's lots of people that are sitting there, and this happens all the time. People just don't want to get involved because they just don't know enough. They don't want to seem stupid, or, you know, they're just kind of listening. They're, you know, they haven't made their decision. That there's that type of stuff. Plus, one of the reasons why there's people that kind of, you know, because Red State Talk Radio has a listener base where people just play it, and they just play it throughout the day via Alexa or what have you. And that streaming is, you know, attributed to the total stream. So anywho, and the interesting thing is, though, it's, if there's 500 people listening on Alexa at any given time, it's still only counted as one stream to Alexa, because it goes into Alexa, not going from Red State Talk Radio out to these Alexa boxes. I just want you to understand that. That is an, it goes, it gets fed into the Amazon cloud, and then Amazon cloud feeds it out to everybody. It's the same thing with Apple Play and all of these other cloud types. We only get counted for one stream, by the way. So anywho, that being what it is, and it, and everybody has to deal with this, it's really hard to get, you know, true ground truth on your numbers. But let me move on to the content. I just wanted to give you that listen line. And as always, I kind of went down a tangent, and forgive me. So here we go. Again, this is Madison. Let us consider, sir, what is the ratio in which the states in their individual capacity ought to bear the debts of the United States? And what is the ratio in which they will contribute under the taxes that is proposed to levy? The only evidence by which we can guide ourselves in this inquiry is a statement from the several custom houses. I believe indeed that such a statement may not be conclusive. I think it is imperfect. At the same time, it is the best guide in our reach, and probably it will be sufficient to illustrate the present argument. The state of New Hampshire, according to this statement, will contribute about 1/100 of what will be contributed by the whole. Her ratio of contribution, according to her representation, would be nearly about 1/20. Here, then, in fact, is a savings to our fifths to that state. The state may then take this saving and apply it to propose of discharging her domestic debt. She is relieved in that proportion, and therefore, in that proportion, she is more able to provide for her state debt under the new constitution than under the old one. The state of Connecticut will contribute about 1/30. Her proper quota would be about 1/13. Now, instead of 1/13. Here, then, is a savings of two-thirds to the state of Connecticut, and in that proportion is her situation better under the new Constitution than the old. Taking the states eastward of New York altogether that the gentlemen say are rendered incapable of bearing the burden of their state debts by the adoption of the new Constitution, I say take the whole together, and they will contribute about sixth only, whereas they will have to contribute to a fourth. If this Constitution has not been established and they had paid their part of the debt of the United States, in my apprehension, sir, as the payment of the state debts cannot be claimed as a matter of right, neither can such a payment be called on the principles of equity or what is most all urge, necessity. But we are told that the policy is also in favor of the measure. A gentleman from Massachusetts has said that the people of Massachusetts would never submit to a rejection of the measure, that it will create a spirit of opposition to the government. In short, that it will endanger the union itself. I confess that these are consequences that would be dreadful to me. If I could suppose they would really take place and that evils of greater magnitude would not ensue from an adoption of the measure, it is my opinion, sir, that if the refusal to assume the state debts would produce dangerous consequences to the union from the discontents that is apprehended will grow out of the measure, which much more have we to fear from an assumption, particularly if hazarded by small majority. Sir, if we could ascertain the opinions of our constituents individually, I believe we should find 4/5 of the citizens of the United States against the assumption. I believe we should find more. I believe I speak within the bounds when I say that those who would be for an assumption would not amount to 1/5. This is indeed probable conjecture only. But on the other hand, let me ask, what evidence have we that there will be any great disappointment or discontents from non-assumption? The legislature of the state of New Hampshire have lately been in session. They have asked for this assumption. No, on the contrary, though they have not instructed their delegates to vote against it, it appears that it was thought of and that the bulk of the members disapproved it. The legislature of Massachusetts have been in session. They were apprised that this matter was under consideration, and yet there has been no declaration from them, as far as I know, that they can induce us to believe they wish for it. On the contrary, it would appear on the measure they have taken to provide for the payment of their state debt that they had proceeded on the supposition that an assumption would not take place. With respect to several other states, their legislatures have also been in session, and none of them, except South Carolina, have made any declaration on the subject. If we are to disregard that species of evidence and to look back to the expectation of the people, I do not think that there is a single indication that this measure was ever thought by our constituents. Sir, I may safely say it was never expected by the generality of them. It has been said, too, that policy recommends the measure. It has been repeated that if the assumption does not take place, no part of the revenues drawn from the union at large will return the distant parts of it. Sir, I thought this argument had been set aside some time since. The very reverse will happen. The state debts have begun already to travel around the central parts of the union, and to such an amount as to make it probable that if they are provided for by us, nearly the whole will follow. Should this be the case, I believe such disadvantages will ensue as will prove the measure very impolitic. In proportion as the whole money contributed in the way of taxes shall center near the government or in particular part of the union, you increase the evil of discordant interest and local jealousies, which is already too much felt, but perhaps this is not the worst consequence to be apprehended. I conceive that a very great part of the proper debt of the United States will go into the hands of foreigners, and that we shall be heavily burdened in paying interest to them, which cannot be expected to remain in the country. And in proportion as you increase the debt of the United States, you will increase this evil. This is what we're dealing with now. He's already talking about the fact that we are paying for our blessings. We are paying interest to foreign entities via the Fed Reserve and China and everybody else. They're making money off of our prosperity. And so, what the heck? We need to start making these things in-house and actually do away with all this unconstitutional government and truly untap our potential. We'll be right back after these two promos.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so back to what Madison is saying. And as a matter of fact, like you just said, hey, if we actually start letting this genie out of the bottle, it's only going to increase. We're just going to start creating more and more debt and get into financial ruin. He says this: I'm of opinion also that the measure is not politic, because if the public debt is a public evil, an assumption of the state debts will enormously increase and perhaps perpetuate it. It is my idea, sir, that the United States and the several states could discharge a debt of 80 millions with greater ease and in less time than the United States alone could do it. I found my opinion on this consideration, that after the United States shall have resorted to every means of taxation within their power, there will still remain resources from which monies may be raised by the states. Nay, I will go further and illustrate the remark by adding that after a state shall have extended its power of taxation to every object falling under general laws, there would still remain resources from which further taxes might be drawn within subdivisions of it by the subordinate authorities of the states. But, sir, when we consider that in some parts of the Union there is an inconquerable aversion to direct taxes, at least if laid, by the general government that in other parts of equal aversion to excise prevails, how will the United States, so circumscribed as to the field of taxation, be able to draw forth such resources as are contemplated by the advocates of an assumption? It has been asserted that it would be politic to assume the state debts because it would add strength to the national government. There is no man more anxious for the success of the government than I am, and no one will join more heartily in curing its defects. But I wish these defects to be remedied by additional constitutional powers, or remedied, I wish these defects to be remedied by additional constitutional powers if they should be found necessary. This is the only proper, effectual, and permanent remedy. In other words, through an amendment. Several gentlemen, sir, have gone into another field of argument in favor of this measure. It has been said that the Constitution itself requires the assumption. One of my colleagues has said a very proper question. If, as we have been told, the assumption originated in the convention, why were not words inserted that it would have been incorporated and made the state debts part of the debts of the United States? Now, I have gone through, by the way, we have gone through the ratification debates, and I have actually done a word search for banks, you know, and credit and those types of things. And there was only, I think, total, less than five times in all of the ratification debates, the word bank was even brought in. And when they started talking about debts and so forth, they were done in, you know, just this, okay, it makes sense that the United States shall be able to have, you know, the power and the authority to create debt and to control the fidelity and so forth. But those powers, as it was stipulated by Nicholas, stated that they can't. You got to understand, a treaty is the same thing as a contract, is the same thing as a debt. You can't go into a contract of debt over something you have no authority to do. In other words, if the federal government said, you know what, we're going to actually, you know, pay for everybody to have their own cornfield. We're going to, you know, get a contractor. We're going to send them out to every parcel of land in the United States. And this contractor is going to put in a cornfield, you know, 10 by 10 cornfield for every American. Well, that's not within the Constitution. They don't have that authority. They can't assume the debt and pay that legally. If they did that and everybody just said, okay, well, that sounds good. It's a win for me. It doesn't matter. It is still unconstitutional because the only way they can do it legitimately is to amend the Constitution. And if not done so, and it's allowed to be done, it is a violation and nothing more. That's it. Sir, this is Madison again. Sir, if there was a majority who disapproved of the measure, certainly no argument can be drawn from this source. If there was a majority who approved of it, but thought it expedient to make it a part of the Constitution, they must have been restrained by a fear that it might produce dissensions and render the success of their plan doubtful. I do recollect that such a measure was proposed, and if my memory does not serve me, the very gentleman who now appeals to the Constitution in support of his argument derelished the measure at the time and assigned for a reason that it would administer relief perhaps exactly in proportion as the states have been deficient in making exertions. It has been also remarked that the Constitution, having been established for obtaining perfect justice, it cannot be carried into effect unless full justice is done on the subject, or in other words, unless the state debts are assumed. Sir, if we are to take these words in their full extent, we must stop merely with securing justice to the creditors of the government. We should also endeavor to secure justice to every private creditor, whatever. The gentleman says that by the Constitution, all debts that existed against the United States at the time of the adoption of the Constitution are to be valid as they now are valid now as they were before its adoption. What was the situation of the state debts before the adoption of the Constitution? Was it understood that they were a part of the debt of the United States? Any further than they might be found a balance on a final statement. Was it ever supposed that they were to be thrown into one common mass and that the states should be called on collectively to provide for them? What would have been thought of such a proposition? Would it have been considered as consistent with equity? Would it have been thought constitutional? I am persuaded if such a proposition had been made in the old Congress, it would never have been found a second. And for this reason, that the debts of the particular states were never considered as the debts of the United States. In whatever light we view the question, it appears to me that the arguments urged in support of it are themselves unsupportable. Much has been said of the situation of particular states in cases these debts should not be assumed. Much indeed has been said of the distress and exertions of Massachusetts. But if we are to be governed by inquiries of this sort, we must extend them to every part of the Union, and we shall then find the assumption will give us much dissatisfaction and work as much as injustice to a majority of the states as a non-assumption may disappoint the citizens of Massachusetts. I do not wish to go into local inquiries, but the present subject seems in its nature to make them in some degree unavoidable. The conduct of gentlemen on the other side at least renders the task on this indispensable. What would be the operations of the measure with respect to Virginia? It would not be denied that Virginia sacrificed much during the war in one shape or another and contributed as much to the common defense of the states as any among them, certainly as much as Massachusetts. There are facts that can be in time be proved, since the peace that the state has made great exertions to comply with the requisitions of Congress. I might say, sir, that she almost unequaled in her exertions. Her specie payments into the federal treasury since the peace exceeded $600,000, whereas those of Massachusetts are only between $200,000 and $300,000. In incidence, Massachusetts has indeed paid most, but by no means as such a proportion as to the balance, the difference of the specie payments. The exertions of Virginia to discharge the debt she involved herself in by the war have also been very great. She is not behind any of the states. She is before most of them, in other words, ahead of paying the debt. There can be no debt that she has certainly discharged more of her debts than Massachusetts. And as little doubt in the opinion of the best informed that whenever a final settlement shall take place, that state will be found a creditor to the United States. If during the war she had made as great exertions and had suffered as much as any of the other states, if she has since the peace paid her full proportion of the supplies to the federal treasury, in the same time exerting herself to the utmost to discharge her debt, and finally will probably be found to be in advance to the Union, and would therefore, if justice could be once be done, be now entitled to reimbursement, what must be said by the citizen of that state if, instead of reimbursement, they are called upon to make further advances? So you can see, he's laying it out there as to, you know, to the nth degree, you know, why they have to pay these debts as states and why these debts aren't the United States. He hasn't even hit the uniformity clause, and I'm wondering if he will or not. We'll see.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so we're about halfway through, and technically he's really going down this and focusing on the debt, where the debt is actual property and where it belongs. I don't think he takes the macro view to look at the uniformity clause, because I just did a search for it and uniform doesn't come up. And so, but I do know that in many of his arguments, I think it's the cod fishery bounty where he does talk about the binding of the uniformity clause, that the federal government cannot treat one state differently than another. And states in the union cannot act or behave differently than one to the other. So that being all said, Madison goes on and says, "Sir, I may add here that their contributions to the federal treasury under the proposed system of revenue will exceed the ratio by which they would contribute by taxes laid in proportion to the representation. I do not wish to extend this investigation any further than has already been done, but were I to do it, the evidence would be more striking that the payments from those parts of the union that would receive least benefit from the assumption would be greater than those that would receive the immediate benefit of it. One of my colleagues seems to be of the opinion that the measure will be favorable to the interest of Virginia, but he seems to me to have grounded his opinion on the erroneous supposition that the proposed plan will embrace the whole of the debts as they existed at the close of the war. Then she would have derived according to the constitutional ratio. I believe, on the contrary, that if the assumption should take place, as originally proposed, that there would be a claim on Virginia for $5 million, whereas if there is no assumption, her citizens will have to provide for about $3 million only, and thus instead of bearing her proper burden, which is about one-seventh, she would have to bear a burden in the ratio of one-fifth. It seems to think that his own particular district would be benefited by this measure, but if he be right in his other opinion that the other part of the state will consume more than the others, he will find, sir, that instead of relieving his constituents compared with the rest of the state, that he would still more argument than burdens, so that it would come to this at last, that the state would have to pay $5 million instead of three, and that the particular part of the state he represents, instead of paying their proportion of three, they will have to pay more than their proportion of five. I admit, however, that he is the most proper judge on that subject, but the citizens of Virginia would not only be called upon when already in advance and to an amount beyond their proper ratio, but in a mode that is particularly obnoxious to them. I mean that of excise. Sir, the people of that state are as adverse to excises as those of any other state to be a direct tax, and in my own judgment, with far more reason, where the article excised is not by some particular free from the common objections. Excises are unequal with respect to different parts of the union. They are also unequal to various parts of the same state. This mode of collection gives arbitrary powers to the collectors and exposes our citizens to vexatious searches. It opens a door to frauds and perjuries that tend equally to vitiate the morals of the people and to the defeat and to defeat the public revenue. Besides, sir, excises are more expensive in the collection than other kinds of taxes. The collection of the excise in Great Britain costs 10%. That of her direct tax is computed at only 3% only. I will not positively say that the similar disproportion in the expense of collecting it would be incurred in this country, but in some parts of it, I am sure that the expense of excises would be greatest on some articles in view would, if the collection were made at all, exceed the revenue obtained from it. Sir, there has been an argument of another kind advanced in support of the assumption. Gentlemen have thought it a matter of consequence that not only justice should be done, but that the condition of the people should be equalized. That no equalization. We got to create an equal footing for everybody. Make everybody's burden the same. This is lunacy, and he points this out, that no invidious comparison might be made between the inhabitants of one state and those of another, that no oppression or embarrassment should force the people to immigrate from one state to another. It would be a comfortable reflection if every part of the union could be assimilated in this instance. But, sir, I think we have no authority to sacrifice essential considerations to obtain these advantages. Nor do I know that we should obtain them by assuming state debts. Supposing that the measure to be adopted, let us reflect what would be the situation if the different parts of the union. I do not at this moment consider the question as it respects justice, right, or general policy, but in reference merely to the particular consequences of equalizing the circumstances of the people. Let us take view comparatively of the people of the United States. Massachusetts owes a debt of several millions. The public debt, when you came to analyze it, at least where it is due to the citizens and not to foreigners, it is a debt from one part of the people to the other. The government is the collector from the pockets of the debtor to pay it into the hands of the creditors. If, sir, the state debts should be assumed, Massachusetts will then get rid of her embarrassments, but what would be the situation in Virginia? Besides her public debt, I believe that her citizens owe one another debts in amount equal to the whole part of the public debt of Massachusetts. Perhaps I might say that the amount of both the public and private debts of the state, in addition to all this, the people of Virginia are indebted to foreigners to a greater amount than the whole debt of Massachusetts. Sir, I firmly believe that though Virginia is less oppressed with public debt than Massachusetts, yet when we take view of all of the difficulties she labors under and weigh them against those of Massachusetts, it will be found that Virginia ought to be relieved herself instead of being expected to relieve others. But supposing all objections of another nature to be laid aside, I freely confess that after a more minute of examination into the subject, I am much inclined to doubt whether the assumption can possibly be carried into execution. Difficulties are continually rising when I survey this question, for which I can find no solution without departing from every principle by which we ought to be guided. It never yet has been shown in what manner a remedy could be provided for a partial subscription. Suppose the state creditors were part of them to subscribe and part to refuse. Suppose those of one state subscribe and those of another should not. Again, sir, by what method would you discriminate the debts that come under the definition from those which would be excluded by it? Where will you invest this important discretionary power? I really think the great difficulties will be found before this can be effected. There is another objection to which I have never heard a satisfactory answer, although that has been repeatedly urged by a member from Georgia. There are debts existing in some states that do not bear interest, that have gone into circulation without any title to it, and have been received by the present holders without any other expectation that in some reasonable time the principal would be paid. Would it, sir, be proper or necessary to consider these debts of the Union bearing interest or to provide for the immediate funding of them? But there are cases, in my opinion, far more difficult. I mean the paper money issued to redeem the state debts. The state of North Carolina has taken up its certificates with these paper bills. They are not proposed to be included in the assumption. They are clearly excluded by the present motion. Yet they are much a state debt to be sunken by taxes as certificates, and taxes may as much interfere with those of other states. Some of the states, sir, have not only assumed the debts recommended by Congress for making up the depreciation to the Army, but they have gone further and have made up the depreciation where it was not recommended. Other states have not done this. The debts existing in some states, I take it for granted, comprehend these depreciation notes. Possibly talking about Rogue Island, huh? And so, would it be not unjust to call on those states that have not made this provision for their army that other states have done? Would it not be hard to call upon those officers and soldiers who have not received this additional compensation to pay it to all the other states who have? So he's really laying it out there. Who's paying, who's not, who's being hurt, and who's being taken advantage of? And so we've got more. We will wrap this up in our next episode, and then we'll move into more content for the timeline. And we'll explain all of this in the next monologue. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.